From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Hold your loved ones close for this one, folks. This is a very dark and disturbing episode that we're diving into today. Because today's show contains at times graphic descriptions of violence, it may not be suitable for all audience members, so listener discretion is advised. Like many of our most compelling show suggestions, this one comes to us from a listener, John, in Long Beach.
John says, "What's up, guys? Big fan of your podcast. Been listening for a year now. Only realized that the album logo has six fingers like a week ago."
Hey!
Finally, I knew it would pay off.
I know, we were waiting for John to get it. Good on you, John. All right, he continues. "Anyway, I was wondering if you guys would do a podcast on the disappearance of Madeline McCann. I only just heard about it when a friend told me he just saw a documentary on it. Thanks, guys. Have a great week."
Thanks for writing, John. Yeah, this is referring to a case in 2007. A British-born three-year-old named Madeline McCann disappeared while on vacation, or as they would say in the UK, on holiday, with her family in Portugal. The case made national headlines. Authorities in three different countries conducted multiple investigations, and for more than a decade, they found no solid leads. So what happened? Here are the facts.
Madeline McCann was born on May 12, 2003 in Leicester, England. Her parents were Jerry and Kate McCann. They were married in 1998. Both of them worked in the medical profession. Kate became a general practitioner after studying at the University of Dundee and was working part-time while also taking care of she and her husband's children. Jerry was working as a consultant cardiologist. In addition to Madeline, who was their oldest, the couple also has twins born in 2005.
And in 2007, the family, you know, they're working hard. They're supporting their kids. They decided to go on holiday, as you do. They went to a place called the Ocean Club Resort in Praia da Luz in Portugal. And there they rented an apartment at the Ocean Club Resort.
And I'm guessing this is like, you know, a kind of a suite kind of situation. I mean, a fancier hotel, right?
Well, I pulled some, you know, I'm going to give a reluctant shout out to the Sun. I know I've given it a hard time, rightly so, in past episodes, but they have a graphic layout of the apartment that the McCanns were residing in during this vacation. And it's very helpful, as you listen along today, to have that up so you can see the positions of where the rooms, the windows, and the entrances and exits of this place were. But yeah, think of like an almost like an extended stay apartment.
Yeah. And if you can go to the BBC and find an overview picture of this whole area. So if you have those two pictures up, where you can see where all the places we're going to talk about are and then actually into the thing, I think you're in a good spot.
So let's go to the night of the disappearance. On the 3rd of May, 2007, the McCanns, the parents, met a group of seven friends at a tapas restaurant in the resort complex. This was not very far from their apartment at all. It was about 180 feet or 55 meters. So the reason that's important is it means you could easily walk back to that apartment and back to the restaurant without, you know, it would take hardly any time at all.
It's basically just walking across where the pool area is, and then you're at the tapas bar. It's literally that close.
So Madeline and her younger brother and sister were, those are the fraternal twins, they were staying in the apartment. They were sleeping
or they were supposed to be sleeping. Just keep in mind, these are very young kids. They're probably pooped from a day of vacation. In fact, the parents had noted earlier that the children seemed very tired. So around 8:30 p.m., those kids are sent to bed. The McCanns and their friends are responsible, good parents. They created a rotational system that they used to check in on the kids. So every 20 or 30 minutes, it's someone's turn to go just look in on the kids, not wake them up or anything like that. Just make sure they're okay. Kate McCann's turn comes up around 10 p.m. She walks over to the apartment. It's important to note they had locked the front door of the apartment, but it had a back patio door, like sliding patio door. And that they had left unlocked so they could easily slide the door open or close without waking up the kids. So Kate McCann looks in on the room where Madeline and the two twins are supposed to be sleeping. She notices that the window to this room is open. The shutters have been pulled up. Madeline McCann has disappeared. The authorities are immediately alerted, and the resort staff, the local police, other guests of the resort search all night for Madeline until daybreak, and they find nothing.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that sinking feeling of, you know, and just the how do we even accept that? And just the way your mind must spin, you know, when we were looking at this story, I just kept putting myself in that position, you know, being a dad. And Dad, I'm sure you could understand that feeling as well, only not really. Just even the hint of it is almost more than you can even kind of comprehend. But yeah, they alerted the authorities right away. Police, the resort staff and other guests essentially formed a search party, looking for Madeline until dawn, but they found nothing. In less than 24 hours, the McCann family held a press conference. And I believe there's a 60 Minutes Australia piece on this that has some of the footage from at least one of the multiple public appeals for help that the McCann family eventually did. Over the course of the following few days, hundreds of volunteers joined the search party. Authorities at the border were put on high alert. Staff at the nearby airport was told to watch for the child. And then on May 12th, the authorities in Portugal publicly stated that they believed that Madeline had been abducted. But Silver Lining was alive and somewhere still in the country.
Yeah, or at least they believed, right? Because there was no way to verify it. Then 23 days after the initial abduction or the disappearance, on May 26th, the authorities there released a description of a man who was at that point unidentified. And he had a couple descriptors. He was blonde in hair. He appeared to have acne. And he was seen that night on May 3rd, 2007, around the area. And it was believed that he was possibly carrying a child, or at least carrying something that could be confused for a child. And this description was based on a friend of the McCanns who gave it to the authorities. This person's name was Jane Tanner. She was one of the people who was attending that Tapas restaurant with them on the night that Madeline disappeared.
And let's exist in the present tense here as the search continues. Speculation abounds, taking multiple forms. There are ongoing official investigations, but remember, this disappearance occurs in the age of the internet. That means there are increasingly amateur sleuths getting involved. Theories, some more plausible than others, spread across the media and across the web. So our question today, again, what happened to Madeline McCann? Here's where it gets crazy. First, things are going wrong with the investigation from the jump. There are fundamental problems with the crime scene. In June, the Portuguese police note that the scene was not properly protected, so they may have lost vital forensic clues. There, you'll also see contemporaneous reports of blood being discovered in small amounts, or of sniffer dogs reacting to Kate McCann in particular. And this is something that the red meat chasing tabloids latch onto immediately. In July, British police have a canine squad inspect the vacation apartment there at the resort, as well as the rental car the McCanns used. And they get bupkis, no leads. Fast forward to August. It's now been 100 days since the disappearance. And for the first time, the officials heading these investigations acknowledge that Madeleine McCann may not be found alive. And over the years since this disappearance in 2007, numerous individuals and groups have proposed multiple possible explanations. We've categorized the most prevalent, the most prominent, but we do have to say, again, they run the gamut of plausibility. And some of these theories are, I'm careful not to inject my opinion often, but some of these theories are, to my mind, offensive, because we have to remember these are real people and this is a real three-year-old child.
Yeah, 100%. So I guess we should start at the beginning. The first one that has definitely made the rounds and is referenced pretty extensively in this 2019 Netflix documentary, which, you know, in my mind is a little on the exploitative side. There was a lot of discussion of sex trafficking. Initially, it was believed by some authorities, in particular in Portugal, that Madeleine McCann had been abducted to be sold into a sex trafficking ring. A private investigator named Julian Peribanez noted that these kinds of abductions for this exact purpose have happened in the past. Also, he noted the profit motive. He was quoted in saying the value that Madeleine had was really high. If they took her, it's because they were going to get a lot of money. Wow. Okay. That's a very straightforward way of saying something quite horrible. Unfortunately, this theory is plausible. It certainly is a thing. Abduction for sex trafficking purposes to basically sell people into human beings, children, into sexual bondage, slavery, is a very, very real thing. There have also been some other theories along these lines. According to the Telegraph, an unusually high number of assaults on young girls had taken place in the area.
Specifically, the report found, quote, police identified 9 sexual assaults and 3 near misses on British girls aged between 6 to 12 in the 3 years before Madeleine went missing. In one case from 2005, a 10-year-old girl was assaulted in an apartment there, close to the spot where Madeleine vanished. And, you know, that's a troubling thing to know, and it's probably one of those things that wouldn't be broadcast out to people who are thinking about going on holiday there, specifically in that resort or in that area. And it's pretty disturbing just to know that that kind of thing was happening. But that's not the only theory. Another concept was brought forward that perhaps this was just some form of burglary that had gone wrong. Because remember, this is a place for vacationing people who are there probably carrying cash. A lot of people carry paper money of one sort or another. Even if you're in a different country, you're going to take some cash and get it transferred over to the correct currency when you're there. It's just easier to go that way rather than trying to use a credit card or something like that. So what if somebody was just attempting to break into the apartment to take that money or take some valuables in there, but then came across Madeleine? And if this were true, one would assume that at least some valuables, you know, there within the apartment would have been taken. However, there didn't seem to be anything missing from the apartment besides Madeleine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's an argument against the burglar. I want to go back to the idea that you mentioned about the how the public is or is not informed about these higher rates of disappearances and attacks. That's going to be important later in the story. But to the point of burglary gone wrong, yeah, it seems odd that if they were doing a snatch and grab for valuables, it seems odd that they left some stuff in the apartment.
Well, and also, why would you just walk out with a young girl if you were there to steal valuables, right? Unless it was linked back to what Noel was talking about, you would then sell that girl.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So the other kids were just fast asleep and untouched?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why, again, that's why I'm saying it, that one does not seem to add up. This leads us to something else. The wander away theory, which was popular for a while, or, you know, pretty, it was propagated for a while. It's the idea that the child could have wandered out on her own while she was unsupervised, maybe to explore the vacation area, maybe to check out the nearby water. And then after leaving the apartment, she could have drowned, perhaps, or she could have been tragically struck by a vehicle on one of the nearby roads in a hit and run. This sort of stuff has occurred in the past, but it raises multiple important questions. The patio door was closed. Remember, that's how Kate McCann found, you know, found that her child was missing. So how would a three-year-old manage to close those pretty heavy sliding patio doors behind her that are also pretty tall for her to reach? And then wouldn't a body or evidence of an accident have been found if the especially if there were a hit and run? This is why people went through those three theories pretty quickly, and we're getting to some, we're getting to the part I wanted to warn everybody about earlier, which is the possibly offensive theories. One of the most emotionally harrowing aspects of a case like this is something that a lot of true crime, you know, docuseries never bother investigating. It's that the parents have to also be investigated by the police. Imagine how difficult doesn't even cover it. Imagine how horrific it is, how indescribably painful to be searching desperately for your child while at the same time being interrogated about their disappearance as a suspect. And there were numerous theories here about this. It started like almost immediately after police got involved in Portugal.
I mean, it's procedure. It's standard operating procedure to eliminate all suspects, and that starts with the people that were the closest. And but it's just, I can't even imagine. You're going through all of this stuff in your head and asking all these questions, and then you're even the intimation of being, you know, a suspect would just be so shattering. But that's what happened. In September of 2007, the Portuguese police interviewed Kate McCann as a witness in the case. The next day, they labeled the couple suspects. I think the Portuguese word for that is arguidos, Ben. Is that how you pronounce that?
Well, I don't speak Portuguese, but you're correct, Noel. That's just the specific term in that language that they use for suspects. But to your point, they didn't, you know, they didn't lock the McCanns up, nor did they detain them. Eventually, they allowed the couple and their twins to return to the UK just a few days later. A few days after that, prosecutors said there was no new evidence to justify re-questioning the McCanns, which I think is a good move, because imagine how traumatic that would be to fly back to have to talk about that again, you know, in this setting.
I mean, it's certainly not a good PR look. I can say that to be sure.
Yeah, I would just jump back to the Arguido thing really quickly. That is, under Portuguese law, a very specific thing that gets labeled on people almost always right before they are taken in as like the primary suspect, basically to prepare to be charged for something.
Would that be the equivalent of like person of interest? It's not necessarily, they're not being accused yet, but they're, you know, I mean, I guess person of interest and suspect are the same thing, but for some reason you hear them used not always interchangeably.
According to an expert from The Guardian, a law expert there, the quote is, if you are in Arguido, they have to have suspicion that a crime has been committed by that person. So mm-hmm. The authorities truly believe that you had something to do with it.
Got it. Yeah, because there is a difference. A person of interest is someone that they just want to talk to. A suspect is someone they believe might actually have been involved in the crime.
That's how I would understand it.
So you can see why this group of theories may sound offensive, but it is important to mention them here as we flesh out the full scope of thought on the events. So back to the trafficking ring. People began to say, what if the parents somehow sold their own child to a trafficking ring and then just faked the disappearance? There are two big problems with that. First off, this would require an extraordinary, almost impossible level of dedication and acting on the part of the parents for years and years and years. Also, more immediately, more brass tacks, subsequent investigations to prove something like this would have a very high likelihood of discovering any anomalous financial transactions.
And it's also one of the most monstrous things you can imagine someone doing. And just that alone feels so wrong. And to make an accusation like that, you would need some pretty damning proof. That's a rough idea. But that's not all, right?
Right. Yeah. There's the idea that they were responsible for their daughter's death, not through design, but through accident and subsequent panic.
Yes. There are two authors, Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, who have argued that the authorities believed or suspected that the McCanns possibly gave some kind of drug to Madeline in an attempt to get her to go to sleep, essentially, so they could go across the street and hang out with their friends. This would certainly not be the only time that's ever happened in the history of the world. It's been a pretty common practice to give children a tiny amount of alcohol or, you know, maybe a tiny amount of cough syrup or something that has sleepy effects, essentially, to help their children go to sleep if they're having trouble sleeping. That is by no means an out there, I don't know, even an accusation of something entirely wrong, really. But the idea here is that the McCanns gave Madeline way too much, essentially.
Despite their medical expertise, right?
Yeah, right. Doesn't seem to add up. There's a Portuguese police officer who supported this theory. He went so far as to release a book and a TV doc on the subject. So the concept there, I have not actually watched that doc or read his specific book. What is it? Goncarlo Amaral?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a real stand-up guy.
He is a disgraced police officer, by the way. So this is one of his large lines of business. This went to court. In 2009, the McCanns started taking legal action against his work, because it's incredibly insulting and it's defamatory, right? If it can't be proven. And 2015, Portuguese court agreed. And then later he appealed the decision because the court had awarded them 450,000, the equivalent of 450,000 British pounds in damages. But I think that's still ongoing. This is interesting because at first I thought, are these people vultures who are trying to make a quick buck off of an unspeakable disaster? And then you do see things that at least proponents of these kind of theories consider to be strong circumstantial proof. Unfortunately, it's something that pops up in a lot of cases with parents and disappeared children. They would say, this mom or this dad, in this situation, they focused on Kate McCann. They said, she doesn't seem as fraught, as upset, as emotionally damaged as she should be. These people say, in my mind. And that's where this kind of armchair sleuthing can get dangerous. But there was one interesting quantitative thing that I found that is a fact. In the initial interview, she was asked 49 questions over a long course of time, and she answered only one. I got also a full list of the 48 questions. You can find that online at thetab.com. Look for McCann 48 questions, the tab. And they don't seem like a lot of them seem like maybe relatively innocuous questions. I would want you guys take on these. They didn't seem particularly loaded. They were asking about process, order of operations. And maybe it's just difficult to answer those questions.
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff like, did you search inside the master bedroom wardrobe? Questions about things being out of place, like why was the curtain by the sofa near the side window tampered with? Did someone go behind the sofa? So, Ben, when you say she didn't answer them, like she like said, I reserve my right to not answer this question. Like she exercised her right to not. I mean, like what? Or she said, I don't recall or something. Like, I don't understand.
Well, you got to remember, she is at this point, no matter what happened, she is under a tremendous amount of stress, and she is being looked at as a suspect, essentially, by these authorities that are asking her these questions. It's a pickle of a situation to be in, because like every attorney would tell you, I'm not giving you legal advice here as Matt Frederick, but most attorneys would tell you, reserve your right to not say anything, ever, if you're being asked questions by police.
I got it. That makes sense.
The counterpoint to that is your daughter's missing and these authorities are trying to help you find your daughter.
Well, she said at some point that she didn't answer the questions because she thought that them questioning her was distracting them from actually looking for the real culprit, which is a little bit of an odd way of looking at it. You know, you'd think she would be as cooperative as possible so they could move on. But again, I'm sure there's some resentment there of like, you know, why are you even bothering with me? But again, it's all procedural.
Well, and how could my daughter get abducted, you know, under your watch, essentially?
And why do you guys care about the sofa in my vacation apartment when there's a missing kid out there? Also, how tremendously unfair and stressful it is to be tried in the court of public opinion, which trends misogynistic, right? Let's just be honest about that. You can't look at someone and say that the way they appear to be experiencing grief is not satisfactory to you, some stranger who's never met the person. And also, it came out later that they had been advised by various parties not to show a ton of emotion, like try not to weep in public interviews and so on, because again, the tabloids will grab it. There are more out there theories, and these theories, I tried really hard to find any kind of possible proof or logic for some of these very out there ones. And I only found a little bit for one, but there are three really out there ones. And we'll get to those theories after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. The first is, get this, I don't know if you guys heard about this one, the secret discovery. The idea here is that Madeline McCann was found safe and alive, but the discovery was kept secret because, the argument goes, by the time she had been found, there had been so much media scrutiny and her picture was plastered everywhere in public that she would never be able to live a normal life under her previous identity. Therefore, Madeline McCann is not found, but another girl is. That just doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah, I mean, off mic, Ben, you were talking about how these are just so out there and also borderline offensive that we're not going to spend too much time on them. But here they are. They definitely are things that have been discussed. Be it on the internet, in some of the reporting, and potentially even in certain circles of law enforcement. The notion that there never was a Madeline McCann, Madeline McCann was some sort of abstraction made up by the British government to distract from other news stories, to be some kind of red herring during, I don't know, potentially a bad news cycle, or designed to help raise funds that ultimately would be diverted to the government. I retract my previous assessment that this could have been discussed within law enforcement circles. I think this is largely a fringy, you know, when there's a vacuum of information, weird stuff tends to fill it. So this is not something that's being taken seriously by the vast majority of people, even a little bit familiar with this case. And we'll just go ahead and caveat it in saying that the existence of Madeline McCann is absurdly well documented. There are numerous pictures of the child with her family, with her siblings, numerous accounts from people who knew her and met her, spent time with her. For this theory to be true, the McCanns themselves had to have been so complicit in the deepest and most well-executed cover-ups that we've ever been privy to. And that would have taken probably decades. It had to have been planned. You know, the all of the pieces would have had to be laid out meticulously. And this just does not make any sense whatsoever. So, I mean, my question is, where is this being circulated? Like, it's wild.
Yeah. This is part of the online echo chamber. So we're talking about armchair investigators, maybe on Twitter, true crime forums, or paid subreddits, things like that. It's strange, though, because one of the out there theories that I think you're right. We can dismiss the idea that there was somehow never a Madeline, but I think there's a little more sand to the theory that there was corruption in Portugal at the time, that Portuguese authorities had some sort of ulterior motive in treating the parents as suspects or pushing that narrative. People were arguing that their treatment of the McCanns went beyond standard operating procedure and that they were, in fact, trying to frame them, to your point, Matt, in an effort to save that tourism industry. I don't know. This is an interesting one. Out of the three, this has more proof.
Yes, Ben, this is a theory that can have sand to it at sometimes just because of the basic facts that exist about certain locations and the economy there that's based on tourism. This one in particular comes from a man named Brian Kennedy, who was a businessman from Edinburgh. He says, you could understand how the mood of public opinion would go from sympathy to vilification, and essentially that the Portugal authorities decided, let's find somebody to blame for this that doesn't make us look bad. He says, I think it's all tied into tourism industry and tourism being down in the country's GDP. It is true that, like we said, in a lot of places, tourism is so vital that the money coming in from out of country, out of state, out of town is the only thing that makes the wheels spin there. I don't see that being a reason to want to frame a family for hurting their child, though.
Yeah, that's a tall order. That's less of a theory or conspiracy about the actual events than it is a theory or conspiracy about the behavior of the authorities afterwards, right?
Yeah, but it is a conspiracy about not wanting to have a dangerous person or not wanting to admit that there is some dangerous person that exists around this high-dollar tourism area. Because then, who in their right mind is going to take their child and themselves on vacation there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's maybe the equivalent of, like, if a murder took place in a house, you know, real estate agents lying about it or covering it up because it's not necessarily something people would jump at the chance to live in a murder house.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not everybody, at least. Some people.
For some people, it might be a feature, you know?
Right, right. Some
you
people
mean us?
Pay extra. I mean, me, yeah. But the interesting part about that point, too, is that this is a wealthy area. There, you can look now and see enormous homes being constructed. So it does, there, you know, you can see the internal logic there, but none of these theories, the three we just explored, have garnered much support, primarily because none of them have generated much evidence in support of what they're proposing. However, this is where we get to the idea of predators in wait. We mentioned reports of some mysterious figures. But in 2017, The Telegraph gave an official stance to these longstanding rumors that Madeline McCann may have been abducted on the order of an unknown, wealthy, childless couple. So not some crazed killer, not some cover-up of an accident, but someone hunting a child on the orders of someone else. And that's because after the disappearance, witnesses were coming forward saying, now that I think about it, now that I recall, I may have seen suspicious individuals hanging out at the resort in the days leading up to the event. It's got some pros and cons. Pro, any lead is helpful at this point when these folks are coming forward. Con, they don't have, in a lot of cases, they don't have camera footage of this or something. They just have their memory. And memory is one of the worst witnesses in human experience. But the idea here is that there may have been an operation involving multiple people, some acting as spotters. And to put a brutal fine point on it, in this theory, the idea is that people were waiting for a child of maybe a certain ethnicity, maybe a certain hair color or appearance, a certain age, and then they waited till they found someone who fit those specifications. That's chilling if that happens. And there was one report that was followed up on, which was a report of a couple, right? An unidentified couple.
That's right. This report of an unidentified couple seems to have been substantiated. The idea that these were something known as spotters, which would be people complicit in the child sex trafficking ring or in trade. I don't know what the hell you want to call it. But this is a job. People searching for a child who met the particular requirements of what was being sought. Whether that be race or age or hair color, God only knows. And this report of this unidentified couple, like I said, does seem to have been substantiated. A couple later came forward and thought one sighting may have been them as they were walking in the area. But upon further investigation, they had nothing to do with the case. So we should get back on track to that Tanner report. A single unidentified man, I believe blonde with acne, as was the descriptions early, carrying a child. But as we know, at the end of the day, predators are opportunists. So this notion of a predator kind of lying in wait, looking for that perfect moment to spring into action, that seems to be pretty plausible, considering that there appears to have been a high number of sexual predators in the area at that time. And sure, you know, like in any resort area, which often, you know, are in poorer parts of the world, you know, where there the people that actually live there aren't particularly wealthy, would never actually stay in the resort. So there certainly is kind of a have and have not mentality. And it makes sense that break-ins and thefts would be relatively common. But this idea of a lone predator really didn't seem to go anywhere until very recently, this year, in fact.
Yes, one last time, going back to that report that Jane Tanner, friend of the McCanns, made about one person carrying a child. Did that actually have any weight to it? Maybe she saw something, and maybe the authorities should have paid more attention to it at the time. We'll tell you all about it right after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. As we said at the top, this is an ongoing mystery. And there is a new turn of events in the case of Madeline McCann. Recent revelations, which unfortunately didn't have to be as recent as they are. After years and years, again, a decade plus of fruitless investigation, authorities believe that they have discovered the abductor of Madeline McCann. The suspect is a German man who was originally being referred to as Christian B. We know now his full name is Christian Bruckner. He is, I must note, not to be confused with another Christian Bruckner, who is apparently a famous voice actor in Germany, which I was not aware of. But this Christian Bruckner, he spent his entire adult life being being the worst person, a small-time criminal, an absolute sleazebag. He would travel back and forth between Portugal and Germany, often in an attempt to escape the consequences of one of his many crimes, which began in his teenage years when he sexually assaulted someone. He was on the run for his sexual abuse of children, for forgery, for driving without a license, for petty theft, for drug dealing. His former associates, who are one of the main reasons that authorities caught on to him, his former associates described him as one of those kind of resort burglars. He was known for breaking in through the windows of first floor apartments. And he did not directly get caught, or, you know, he did not directly get implicated in the McCann case for a long, long time, which is chilling.
It is chilling. And his most serious crime is a real doozy. It's hard to even say out loud. He is known to have raped a 72-year-old American woman on September 2nd of 2005. The victim...
He tortured her.
Yeah, he beat her with a metal rod after binding her, presumably raping her. And he, you know, the police reports indicated that she had been beaten around the chest and legs and buttocks. Was horribly bruised. I mean, thankfully she left with her life. But yeah, she'd been staying in an apartment that was along the daily route between Bruckner's house and the beach that he visited every day. And yeah, I mean, there's more details that we have here. Really steel yourselves, folks. These are quite disturbing.
So we know that this person was, you know, their apartment was along that daily route between Bruckner's house and a beach he visited every day. One night, the night of September 2nd, around 10:30 PM, he enters through this person's front door, which is unlocked, because this is supposed to be a relatively safe neighborhood. He dragged her through the building. As you said, Noel, he bound her, he tied her down. He beat her with what has been described as a metal rod, but also a scimitar, which might be a translation error there. He did assault her and torture her, after which he dragged her forcibly into the kitchen of the apartment, and he forced her to give him cash that she had on her person, and he made off with her computer. She survived, thankfully, and Portuguese authorities investigated this case, but they closed their investigation a year later in 2006, and Bruckner was not... Bruckner almost got away with this. He pretty much did. No one knew about his association. And then he started bragging to his criminal friends about it in the I don't know what you would call it, the world of thievery, his fellow thieves, the people who would squat on properties with him and then help in their mind, Bruckner was a sleazebag with a big mouth. But he would help them come up with schemes to steal stuff, like really small-time stuff, like stealing gasoline, stealing diesel. I didn't know that was a thing that anybody other than like large oil companies did. I didn't know it was like a microeconomic crime as well. So Bruckner is talking with these associates of his, and he discloses that while he was conducting this horrific assault, he filmed it so that he could view it recreationally later. And this is a step too far. Imagine you're one of those other, probably not to profile, but you're probably kind of a sleazebag too. And you say, hey, I thought we were just stealing stuff to get, you know, drug money or something. It's a step too far for me to be part of your violent sex crimes that are on film. And that compels these people, that compels them to go to the authorities, which we have to say, you know, if they had not done so, we have no idea how the next series of events would have played out.
Right. And Ben, weren't there internet posts that he had made or some kind of journaling that he had done talking about his kind of escalating fantasies about abducting and using someone, a child even, for sex?
Those were alleged. I haven't actually seen the files themselves, but they were alleged chat room logs.
Right, right.
That he had done where he talked about capturing something little and keeping it for a while.
Mm-hmm. And there was an interesting point made in that 60 Minutes piece, the Australian 60 Minutes, where one of the investigators said that it could be argued that, well, the MO for this guy was old women. But honestly, the MO for this guy was just helplessness and being able to take someone and have them bend to his will. And so it's really honestly the same having a child or having a helpless elderly woman. This, as awful as that sounds, it does fit the same MO.
So the purported statements made by Bruckner online were found in dedicated pro-child abuse forums on the dark web. And again, to your point, Matt, I don't think they have 100% proof that he did that, but it's strongly suspected that he was the author. You can hear the recreations of that on 60 Minutes, on the Australian 60 Minutes, which is a bit exploitative, but it is important information because if it is 100% confirmed to be this guy, then we see also evidence of premeditation, right? Of a plan and an escalation. And it is pretty sickening. It's also not the first time, again, that this guy has been implicated in these sorts of villainous, unclean behaviors. There was a documentary, I know a lot of us are familiar with the recent Netflix documentary, but there was another documentary about a missing, very young girl, a five-year-old named Inga Gehrig from Germany. She vanished from a German campsite 8 years after McCann disappeared, and the documentary appears to implicate Bruckner. He was investigated for the disappearance of this child, I think around 2016, and they ultimately did not charge him with kidnapping or with homicide or anything like that, but they found things that were much, much worse. The kind of things that, if I were an investigator, I think if anyone was an investigator, they would be the kind of things that haunt you for years afterwards.
Yeah. And then if it was a movie, one of those officers who just couldn't handle it would just end up putting that guy in a shallow grave somewhere. Sorry. Yep. That's just
Yeah. That's where my mind started to go. Like I was saying, when I was spiraling out thinking about this, you know, and obviously, I mean, the parents are following all this in the news. They know this guy's a suspect. They know roughly what the public knows, what we have access to. I would just go. I would lose my mind. I would fly into a murderous rage. I just don't know.
And just to note here, this documentary we're discussing right now, within it, there apparently are friends of Bruckner who were speaking with the documentary filmmakers. They said that he would often brag about this very specific vehicle, a large camper van, and how it was ideal for, quote, hiding kids and drugs. And within this camper, authorities found stashes of little girl swimsuits and thousands of images of children in sexual situations. And this was when they were investigating Bruckner specifically for Inga's disappearance that we were speaking about before in 2016, a completely separate child.
Mm-hmm. And also, I hate to say it, but we have to be accurate and explicit here. This is child pornography.
Yes, I didn't mean to skirt around that. It's just I wanted to say it without saying it.
Well, and is there a sense, I mean, maybe we'll get there. I know there's another big term twist coming soon, I guess, but was there a sense that any of these were images that he himself had created?
Or unknown was this at all this time?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we don't know at this time. This leads to, thankfully, legal consequences. As of 2019, well, as of 2020, right now, Bruckner is held in a German prison. He's held on charges unrelated to the McCann case. So let's start putting some of the sinister pieces of this puzzle together. He traveled often between Germany, Spain, and Portugal. During 2007, the time of the McCann disappearance, he had been living in this area, Praia de Luz, as a waiter or a barman, which I assume is a bartender, in various pubs, right? And he was also constantly, by his own admission, on the watch for opportunities to steal from tourists, bragging to his associates about how great his van was, how it was a safe spot. He would talk when he was in his cups about the idea of selling children in Morocco. Now, how much of that is just like self-aggrandizing braggadocio of an evil man? How much of this is a plan or a process? In 2017, investigators start looking at Bruckner.
I mean, being a bartender would be a pretty choice opportunity to find out information about folks that are there on vacation, people that are, you know, having some drinks, get loose lip, talk about where they're staying, talk about who they're with, you know? I mean, we obviously know that the parents like to have a good time, like to have their tapas, you know? Maybe they ended up at this gentleman's bar at some place where he worked, and I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, it's certainly possible. But you're right. The now notorious camper. Authorities worked off reports from neighbors that Bruckner spent long hours in a shed on the property and began digging. The shed is described in an article I read as something like a depraved shed, which is pretty accurate. More than accurate, actually. They started to dig. They found a hidden cellar. They were seen carrying forensic bags out, as well as a child's toy bucket, apparently uncovered thousands of videos on hard drives and USB sticks, supposedly buried along with his dog, is what I read. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was underneath. That stuff was underneath
the cellar. Yeah, right. Exactly.
To clarify, this was a search that was conducted in a field in northern Germany where the guy was squatting for a long time. It's about 4 miles from where Bruckner once lived. But his neighbors all, you can tell his neighbors all distrusted and hated him. Like he would tell people he was a car mechanic if they asked what he did. But his own van was continually leaking fuel and in a state of disrepair. The hidden cellar is true detective level stuff.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Did we talk about where he was staying in Portugal right there by the resort? Did we talk about that already?
We indicated that he was very close.
Yeah, there are a couple places online where you can find the actual area, the place where Bruckner was staying at the time when Madeline disappeared, and it was not far from the resort where she was abducted from.
And it was also, if he was the author of those things on the dark web, it's his, and if he did this, then it follows the outline, the order of operations that this author on the dark web was talking about. So that's another puzzle piece.
And, you know, as of now, none of these recordings or whatever tapes. And again, this is why I asked the stuff they found in his van. Is there any indication that he created this himself? This stuff seems like he may have. Some of the authorities that were interviewed in that 60 Minutes piece absolutely are characterizing him as a serial killer type, as a psychopath, you know, at the very least a serial killer in the making. They're keeping a tight lid on whatever they found in that cellar. And honestly, I would look at it as an act of mercy, you know, to the parents that stuff isn't available for them to see. Who knows? There's somebody, again, in the 60 Minutes piece, one of the investigators indicated that maybe she could have been on one of those tapes.
German authorities, British authorities, Portuguese authorities all seem to indicate, without sharing the totality of their information, they all seem to indicate that Bruckner is the person behind the disappearance. One of the most disturbing parts here is that German authorities right now are 100% convinced that Madeleine McCann is no longer with us, that she is dead. They believe she died shortly after the abduction. They believe she was abducted by Bruckner. They believe Bruckner murdered her. But they also believe that they have, at this point, insufficient evidence to officially charge him, which puts them in a weird position because the German prosecutors are saying, this is the guy. I told the family why. We know this is the guy. We just need more evidence. And then members of German law enforcement, in other regards, are saying the same thing. To your point, Noel, you know, I think it is noble to say that they're maybe withholding that as an act of mercy for the parents. But I believe there's also the very compelling motive that they don't want to fumble a technicality that would invalidate the case. They want to get the monster.
Right. All of this aside, do you know what kind of charges he is facing? I mean, obviously, he must have gotten out for that rape of the 72-year-old woman. And, I mean, they found the child porn in his van. I mean, surely he's already facing some pretty serious charges and isn't going to be, like, out anytime soon.
Yeah, so it's odd that you mentioned that because he recently dropped his bid for early release from prison. He's been serving prison time on unrelated drug charges. So it's a pattern that we see happen often with, you know, we've been very careful to avoid the word, but to avoid the phrase serial killers. But it's a pattern that we have seen often in these sorts of arrests or in these breaks in a case. It's not uncommon for the person who turns out to be a culprit of one crime to already be incarcerated for a different crime. And that's we've seen it in numerous episodes of this show. He is, I think, as of July 2020, he's about two-thirds through his prison sentence on those drug offenses. And then after he does that, he has to start his 7-year prison sentence for the 2005 assault. So they wouldn't, the court wouldn't allow it to be served concurrently, if that makes sense. They wanted to keep him in jail for as long as possible, or in prison, I should say.
And just a reminder, they did not catch him for that assault initially. It took a long time for them to figure out that it was Bruckner when people who were around him started talking.
Absolutely. And this also Portuguese police have currently confirmed they are re-examining evidence now that they have a bit better idea of what to look for. They have saliva samples from the crime scene, and they say they're sending those to Germany to be tested against Bruckner's DNA. His lawyer, one Friedrich Fulcher, said that his client, Bruckner, denies any involvement in not just the McCann case, but in two other cases of missing children that he's currently under investigation at some level for. And that's where we are. So much of this stuff happened just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. We can't recommend that you, if you are interested in this, check out some of the timelines that are available out there. Look at some of the images that we mentioned earlier, take a look at it. Maybe, you know, you can see something that the authorities don't, we don't. You never know. We may have one of those unsolved mysteries moments where something just comes to light that maybe you were aware of, or you saw something one night that you didn't realize if you were in that area and you're listening to this now. You know, it is one of those cases that I certainly hope has a conclusion at some point. Very soon, they can give this family a little closure.
And now, at this point, we know that there may be some sort of closure, and that is something that can finally answer a question that has haunted all the survivors of Madeleine McCann for, again, more than a decade. Our thoughts go out to the McCann family. Our thoughts also go out to all of the parents and relatives of other people who have disappeared or have somehow gone missing. We know that in this case, it seems the wheels of justice grind slow, but hopefully exceedingly fine. We don't have the answers. We cannot predict the future. We do not know how this will proceed, this case with Christian Bruckner. But we can say it feels extraordinary that German authorities are saying that they found the murderer with such certitude. There's no hemming and hawing. The only thing they're saying is that they can't officially, they don't have the evidence they need yet to officially charge this person. But I would expect more updates soon, maybe even before this podcast comes out.
And one more note here on just the updates and new information. According to the BBC, the UK's Metropolitan Police says it received more than 270 calls and emails since there was a brand new appeal for new information that happened in June. So there are people who are trying their best to give any and all info they can that may be relevant. So who knows what we're going to find very soon.
And let us know what you think. As always, we want to hear from you. You can find us anywhere online. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We highly recommend our Facebook community page. Here's where it gets crazy.
That's right. You can join your fellow conspiracy realists on there with just the drop of a name or a joke of some kind or just anything to let us know that you're a person that's interested in this show and wants to get in. If you don't want to do that, you can find us on the usual social channels on Twitter, on Instagram. We're Conspiracy Stuff or Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can also find us as individual human people on social media. I am on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown.
If you have input about this case, related cases, or any other topics we've covered on the show and you want to talk to me directly, you can find me at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter or at Ben Bolin on Instagram. But what if you hate social media and prefer to use a phone? We have a solution for you.
What? You prefer to use phones in 2020? Me too. Give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave us a message. Your thoughts, your ideas for new episodes, your jokes about the Illuminati. We accept all. Please give us a call. If you don't want to do that, you can always reach us the good old-fashioned way. Send us an email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.